Welcome to our panel. So how many of you have heard of the term esports in the audience? Wow, that's great. Definitely, I was anticipating more people not knowing esports, but then it's great that the word is out there. So to start off, just a quick introduction for the four of us here. I'm David Teen. I'm also the organizer for IPL, IGN Pro League.
I'm Che from Korea. I'm a manager of GSL, Global StarCraft 2 League. Thank you.
My name is Kevin Lin. I'm the Chief Operating Officer of Twitch TV and Justin TV.
I'm Anna Prosser, and I am an esports media professional, as well as working for Team Evil Geniuses.
Great. So to start off, we want to keep it a little bit light in the subject. So if you look at this picture, how many of you, if you're a parent, I know there's a lot of young guys here in the crowd, so if you're a parent, would you approve this activity? Do you think these are the future athlete or the, you know, are they doing activity that's constructive to their career? How many of you would raise your hand and say yes?
Oh.
Wow, that's a lot. So great. That's awesome.
You're 100% of the parents?
I'm a parent myself, and I'm debating with my wife on this one. So the whole purpose of this panel is really try to convince you that this is actually a growing area, and this is actually a good path for kids. If they want to basically play video games, be the best video gamer that's out there. And then through this panel, we'll basically explain the reasons why. We also want to keep this interactive, so feel free to raise your hand and ask a question anytime. So the answer is yes. So imagine one day, like a game like StarCraft 2 is equivalent to NFL. I know it's a bold statement right now, but we'll give you some data points that actually shows you that we're actually well under its way. I don't know if any of you guys know in the crowd that NFL was not that successful in the 60s and 70s. And it took them, I think, all the way till 1980 before it became profitable. So in esports, think about it as the early days of basically a sports league. So why do we think esports is going to be more popular? So this chart is actually very telling. So in the United States, there are 135 million people who play games. So it's a really huge population to draw from just the United States itself. What's more interesting is that if you look at the age group of basically who plays games, I'm almost close to this group, the boomers, but not quite there, but I'm in Gen X. But in the age group of 45 to 60, 15% of people play video games. So you got to be really elite to basically be able to enjoy video games. When you're in the 30 to 44, you'll basically the percentage went up, it doubled to 30%. About 1 in 3. I'm in that group. Like in Annas, 20 something. It's actually every other person plays video games. But then what's more interesting is actually the teenagers and the children today, that 97% of the kids play video game or learn with games. So the key here is that the youth play more video games than sports. So as the demographic gets younger, it's actually more relevant to them than, say, even like baseball, football, or soccer as basically some of the sports. Okay? So also, one of the things to think about is that the internet has changed a lot of things. And one of the things that hasn't really changed yet to the maximum degree is sports. So if you look at some of the new mediums like YouTube, back in the days, you had to get a satellite, you had to broadcast, you had to buy airwave, you had to basically get your content onto the NBC, ABC, CBS of the world. But these days, you just basically pop on a camcorder or pop in a webcam and you start casting on Twitch or on YouTube, get videos made. And if you look at this new medium that's available to people, that a lot of people are getting successes. And the influence, I would say, is almost like sportscasters of yesterday or even today. So if you look at these three people, the one who says noob is Husky StarCraft. He's extremely popular on YouTube. So over the last 2 years, he has accumulated over 600,000 subscribers and almost 300 million views in a span of 2 years. And day nine, he's been a star player who turned to caster. And he does a variety of things. So the YouTube statistic doesn't really demonstrate, you know, how popular he is. But, you know, just I think in the last year when he started a YouTube channel, he has a quarter million subscribers and about 40 million views. And HD StarCraft, who started at the same time as Husky, is also another one of the top YouTube broadcasters, and he has almost 400,000 subscribers and 160 million views. So if you look at this, this is a massive reach, and they're influencing a lot of people and building content that a lot of people enjoy for just one game. It's amazing for me. Two of the top 100 YouTube broadcasters are broadcasting one game, which is StarCraft 2. So, and you're welcome to stop us anytime if you have questions. So this is a very friendly crowd. So anyways, at this time, I would like to turn over to Mr. Che to talk about Korea, because in Korea, they're about 5 to 10 years ahead of what it is esport in the United States. So, Mr. Che, would you like to give us a perspective of what it is like?
Okay, I will introduce our Korean esport scene to you, but my English is not good enough to presentation and for give information to you. So, our team crew, and he is as well GSL producer, he will translate my opinion to you guys. It's Jay.
예. 그 한국에서는 e스포츠가 이제 굉장히 많이 발전을 하고 있는 이미 상당한 수준으로 발전을 이루었습니다.
In Korea, e스포츠 has developed a lot since the start of e스포츠.
예, 그 이유 중에 여러 가지를 얘기했는데 일단 데이비팅이 얘기해 준 것처럼 한국의 인터넷이 전 세계적으로 가장 빠른 인터넷을 자랑하고 있는 한국이기 때문에 인터넷을 이용한 여러 가지 콘텐츠 문화에 훨씬 더 빠른 속도로 다른 나라보다 문화 형성에 산업을 이루었습니다.
There's a lot of reasons to it, but the main reason is the internet system in Korea. It's very well known to the world that Korea has a very good internet system. So a lot of people could access the internet very easily. So that was the main reason why esports could develop in such a short time.
네, 이제 현재 인터넷은 전 세계적으로 인터넷이 거의 평준화됨에 따라서 미국의 인터넷도 한국의 인터넷 환경과 거의 똑같아지고 있어요. 그래서 지금 사진을 보시면 아시겠지만 한국의 저희 GSL, 글로벌 스타크래프트 리그라는 대회에 한국에서의 결승전에 이렇게 많은 젊은 관객들이 모여서 경기를 보고 있는 그런 장면입니다.
Now the internet system, the network system around the world is also developing. So they have as well as internet connection as in Korea. And if you look at the PowerPoint, it shows how many people attended the GSL finals. And it shows how popular GSL finals was held in Korea.
네, 그 미국에서는 이제 NFL이 제가 알기로는 가장 인기 있는 스포츠라고 알고 있는데 NFL이 가장 인기 있는 스포츠인 여러 가지 이유가 있을 거예요.
Mr. Che understands that NFL is very popular here in the States, and he knows that there is a lot of reasons to why NFL is so popular in the States.
예, 그 저 한국에서는 이제 그 NFL이 거의 이제 즐기지 않는 스포츠이기 때문에 중학교나 고등학교, 대학교에서 즐기지 않는 스포츠이기 때문에 사실상 큰 인기가 없지만 미국에서 그런 인기를 자랑하는 이유는 그 많은 젊은 층들이 중학교, 고등학교, 대학교에서 계속 NFL을 즐기고 있기 때문에 그 미식축구를 즐기고 있기 때문인지 아닌가 싶습니다.
So he thinks one of the reasons why NFL is so popular in the States is because a lot of young generations enjoy playing football since elementary school to their high school and even in college. In Korea, we don't really have football, so it's very hard for us to play football in Korea. So that's the main reason why NFL is not that popular in Korea.
네, 한국에서는 어린 층이 99% 거의 100%의 인원이 10대는 모두 게임을 즐기면서 자라고 있고 그들이 하나의 PC를 각 10대가 하나의 PC를 각자 소유하고 있기 때문에 e스포츠와 e스포츠 방송을 즐기는 데 훨씬 더 적합해 있고 그들은 앞으로 성장하면서 e스포츠 문화를 즐기며 자랄 것입니다.
Instead, the teenagers in Korea own their own PCs, so it's very easy for them to play games. And that's why almost everyone above 90% of the teenagers play games and enjoy esports while they're teenage age.
네, 사실 그들은 아직 이제 10대, 20대 초반이기 때문에 시장에서 그 지불을 제대로 할 수 있는 능력을 아직까지는 많이 갖추지 못한 그런 10대들이에요. 어린 친구들입니다.
Because they're so young, they're not really financially independent yet.
그러나 그들이 4년, 5년이 지나서 그들이 누군가의 부모가 되고 어엿한 직장을 얻어서 무언가 사회에 돈을 쓸 수 있는 마케팅을 형성한다면은 이 e스포츠가 지금보다 지금도 이렇게 큰데 얼마나 더 크게 될지 상상하기 어렵습니다.
But in 4 to 5 years when they graduate from school and get jobs and be independent, financially independent, they will be able to buy more products of e-sports and create a new market for e-sports.
네, 그리고 e-sports는 기술의 발전에 따라서 e-sports 같이 발전할 수 있다고 생각하는데요. 그래픽이 발전하면은 게임의 그래픽이 늘어나게 좋아지기 때문에 보다 더 많은 흥미를 얻고.
E-sports is an integration of technology. So as technology develops, e-sports will also develop as well.
그리고 네트워크나 스트림의 발전은 선수들에게 스트림을 방송을 빠르게 제공할 수 있는 그런 환경을 제공합니다. 케빈이 이제 그런 일을 하고 있습니다.
And the development of network system will allow us to broadcast more e-sports events all around the world.
네, 그리고 소셜 네트워크나 페이스북 같이 이런 트위터나 페이스북 같은 소셜 네트워크에 익숙한 10대는 그런 발전된 e스포츠를 공유하고 서로서로 같이 즐기는데 훨씬 더 최적화되어 있습니다. 그리고 엔나가 역시나 그런 일을 많이 담당하고 있습니다.
And the development of the social network system, SNS system, will allow people to share their experiences of enjoying e-sports to their friends or to the people they know.
그래서 앞으로 기술이 여러 기술이 발전함에 따라 e스포츠는 그런 여러 기술들을 집약해서 같이 발전할 수 있기 때문에 기술 발전에 따른 산업 발전이 훨씬 더 빠른 다른 산업보다 빠르다고 생각됩니다.
So as technology and the SNS and the network system develops, e-sports will develop as well, and it'll be good for e-sports to as a whole to develop.
그 다른 기술보다 이제 훨씬 더 몇 배 빠른 속도로 발전할 수 있을 것
같아요. So e-sports has a lot of potential to develop very fast.
네, 한국의 e-sports 스타는 이미 전 세계적으로 영화 배우 같은 이미지를 가지고 있습니다. 그래서 돌아다니면 사인을 받기에 따라다니고 뭐 이렇게 사진 찍기에 따라다니고 그런 머천다이징 상품도 개발되고 있고요.
In Korea, the stars of e-sports are as popular as movie stars and a lot of celebrities, and they have a lot of fan base, and the fans always follow their moves.
네, 이것이 이제 미국과 다른 나라에서도 e스포츠가 발전한 나라에서 수개월 안에 같이 일어날 일이라고 저는 생각합니다.
And we think this will happen in the States and all around the world in a few months.
네, 그런 것들을 위해서 IGN과 GSL이 같이 연합하게 돼서 굉장히 기쁘고 앞으로도 발전을 위해 노력하도록 하겠습니다.
To make that happen, we are very glad to be partnerships with IGN and to develop e-sports all around the world.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Che. So one of the things that we've seen is that esports is extremely popular in Korea. Getting 20,000 people into, you know, a convention hall, filling it is an incredible feat in any sport. So even in the States, that basically will be tournament as a major sport. So one of the things that we're seeing is that its popularity actually showing up in the West. So this is basically what it looks like in Europe. So this is an ice hockey rink that was basically converted into a stadium by DreamHack. There were about 18,000 people who were attending the event, about 4,000 people at any time basically fill this rink watching eSport. Most people will not leave their seat for probably 12 hours watching this nonstop. So this is what it looks like at BlizzCon. So GSL hosted its final last year at BlizzCon. So this is what it looks like within the conference hall in the Anaheim Convention Center. It's completely packed, standing room only. 25,000 people approximately were in the hall, basically filled up the entire convention center. And 300,000 people were watching online. So one of the things IPL did is that we believe in taking esports up another notch. So our flavor of esports is really following the path in Korea, where we take the production quality and try to make it just like opera or some a very catering to like the high-end audience. So this is basically a picture that was taken within Caesar's Palace in Atlantic City last year. This is in the Circus Maximus Theater, and you can see eSports basically broadcasted live for 4 days there. And this was yesterday at South by Southwest. So if you were downstairs yesterday in the Streamburn Arcade, basically the entire floor was standing room only. We had a show match between Stefano versus White Raw, and basically it packed the entire area. So One of the things that, you know, again, this is for IGN Pro League, where I'm very humble in looking at, you know, the projecting the future of esports. But, you know, we've been, you know, started less than a year ago. So when I look at basically the growth from our first event, which is just a $5,000 invitational, to IPL 3 and upcoming IPL 4 in early April in this Cosmopolitan in Las Vegas, we're seeing a really encouraging sign in viewership. So this is basically concurrent viewers. So in our last live event, which is our first ever live event, we basically did 127,000 concurrent viewers. And if you compare that to traditional, you know, ratings on television, basically on the right, these are the sporting event. Of course, we have to start low somewhere. We cannot compare to the Super Bowl, which is about a 96 million concurrent viewers, a household. That's basically the biggest event in America. But if you look at MLS, Major League Soccer, and in NHL, if the growth actually, you know, continues, you know, at IPL 4, which is coming next month, in collaboration with GSL, who's going to host our finals at the same event, it is very likely we'll be at the MLS level, exceed that, or even, you know, if we're lucky and we do our job right, we'll basically be above the NHL level. So basically, at that time, if you look at online viewership, we're actually a major sport. So it's really, at that point, it's really changing the perception of people's mind on what is determined a sport. It is basically playing video game considered a sport, and that's really, you know, from basically the popularity of it, it basically established that stature. So when you think about esport, most people basically think about gameplay. You watch gameplay, you have caster cast it. But one of the things that, you know, you'll see around, you know, the world, you know, GSL, IPL, and other leagues, we basically produce a wealth of content around the sport. So just like NFL, you know, you have the normal Sunday games, but there's a variety of shows and content that are created around the game itself. There are basically tips teaching people how to watch, how to play. There's basically things about the venue, really hyping up the events, talking about the games, hyping up the games, top five play, like ESPN-like, you know, watching the top plays that happen every week. Reality show around the players, you know, just really getting the whole human emotion and the struggles, trying to make it as a pro gamer. Interview of the players, like the person pictured here, he used to be a carpet cleaner, and he's one of the most popular, Destiny, he's one of the most popular esports figure today, and he's extremely popular on the stream. And then also we do an ESPN-like news, covering some of the top news, and also profile some of the celebrity around the community, like Anna today. So one of the things that you'll find about the league is that actually the economics are very similar to traditional sports leagues. So most of our revenue comes from sponsorship. So very generous sponsors basically takes care of us running events, paying, you know, for player travel as well as their prize pool. And as it grows in popularity, we hope that ticket sales, publisher support, merchandising, and content licensing will pick up, basically, you know, catch up to traditional sport. The more interesting aspect is actually looking at the player economics, because my firm belief is that if everybody is convinced that you can make a living being a really good gamer, then more people will give it a try. And really, you know, like the image I put in before, like when you see your kids playing video games one day, you say, gosh, I proved this activity, play more video games. At that time, I'll bet you the kids will play less. But anyways, going back to the player economics, you know, a lot of people think about the winnings, but winnings is actually a small part of their take-home pay. There's actually sponsorships, team salary. But here with us today is the COO of Twitch TV, and he's going to talk about really an emerging way of players making money. It's really streaming the content. So, Kevin?
Great, thank you, Dave. Yeah.
I just have a question on the last slide. Mm-hmm. So what about the security? If you take a Tom Brady who plays NFL, he has to stay in his game, but he doesn't have to have a concern about the NFL going away. Whereas Blizzard would make tons of money making a new RTS 7 years from now. And there's constantly new games coming out. And there really is no sense of security in the esports pro. In 3 years, if a new game comes out and it's a new big game, because there's so many coming out, he could be lost at age 24 with no...
That's a great question. So let me talk about our philosophy, at least running IPL as a league. So if I look at it, we pick our titles very carefully. So we basically study how games are played, and we also look at the business model of the publisher before we select it. So if you look at StarCraft II, it's a no-brainer. Korea, you know, like GSL has proven that it works. It's more about spreading its popularity in the West, so it's a lot easier than other games. So when we pick our second game, we basically pick League of Legends within Riot. One of the reasons why we jump on there, first of all, is that, you know, going back to player the league economics, they're very supportive, you know, handling the prize pool, so we don't have to fund it completely. And then if you look at their model, it's actually a free-to-play model, which is something to really think about, because I believe the free-to-play model is an esports title, the platform of the future. So if you look at Firefall Downstairs, it's a first-person shooter that's a free-to-play. The reason behind it is that more people playing the game, the more money that this game makes. And basically, it will also improve. They will have the money to completely, you know, tune and continue to improve the game engine, so that you'll see that, you know, more games like those evolve. And also, one of the things that we're very careful about is also picking out the spectator experience and also having games has established fan base. So if you look at League of Legends, the reason why we picked it over Han, there are two factors. One is that the fan base is bigger. The second one is that we're looking at the level of investment that League of Legends, you know, Riot is putting into the game, about 400 people, you know, making this game tuned to the max. We really believe in that game has a bright future in front of them. So I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, no, that's great.
Could I speak to that as well?
Absolutely.
On the player side and from a team management perspective as well, we really have to be careful to understand that esports players are going to be a little bit different than established sports players as well. Because, like you said, let's say for some reason StarCraft II breaks down and there's nothing left. No one can ever play StarCraft II again. That player then... for example, let's take my fiancé in control, Jeff Robinson. Love to talk about him. But... he, for example, has an established following on Twitter. He has a stream that people watch. He has a character that people like to interact with. So he's spent time, and his management has spent time, kind of building a persona for him. So if he has to, say, learn a new game or move to something else, he has the security of knowing that people will at least be interested to find out what he's doing next. So he has the opportunity to do that. So, I mean, you can compare it to, let's say basketball were to end and Michael Jordan were still playing. You would still watch Michael Jordan. Whereas the players who maybe don't have, they haven't invested that in their persona, they're not going to be able to continue and still have the fan base. So especially in esports, there's a huge focus on making sure that our players have a following that is not necessarily based on their success in any game.
Any other questions? Okay, so we'll go back to Kevin.
Great. Thanks, David. So as David mentioned, a large part of this whole ecosystem is sponsorship. And if you think about how does sponsorship flow down and end up in the players' pockets? Well, one way is via teams. So teams basically organize these, you know, pools of players, manage them professionally, and then they get sponsorship, and as a result are able to pay the salary. Sponsors also go to leagues like David's and Mr. Chase, and then through that are able to fund these prize pools that these players can compete for. Of course, you know, a very small subset of the pro player population can actually win prize pools. So really, if you're not a salaried player, you know, it's pretty difficult. There's that tiny little word in the center there, which is direct endorsements. There are very few players who can do that themselves without the help of a team. Next slide. So how do we change the ecosystem? This isn't anything new, right? Making money on online content has been around for a while. But, you know, we were able to actually connect sponsors. I put sponsors in quotes because these are essentially a broader base of advertisers with the players directly through our partner program. So just by streaming their gameplay, they can actually make money running ads. And this really opens up the opportunity for players to make more money from sponsors that don't traditionally want to support teams specifically yet or leagues specifically yet, because it is a very young industry in America. So as a result, you know, we can get folks like Doritos and Ford and Gillette to buy advertising against this content that these guys are creating because it's much broader reach. So it's increasingly more monetizable because it's premium content, especially the leagues, especially, you know, the personalities like Day9 and In Control who are creating consistent content, good content, bringing on people for interviews, offering very high-level commentary so that they can help you understand the game more. It's really premium content. Video ads are also a growing part of advertiser spend. So it's a lot of the money's moving from, you know, magazines and television and other outlets onto video advertising online. And the audience has grown big enough, right? There's 60 million people on Twitch any given month watching this content. Of course, it's not just esports content on Twitch, but a large part of it is. And as a result, you know, more and more people are starting to pay attention to this really hard-to-reach, you know, hard-to-influence market. We've also offered alternative revenue models. There are just two to start with. One is pay-per-view, which helps primarily leagues and tournaments pay, you know, charge for tickets just as the UFC does, just like boxing does in America. And then there's subscriptions. So larger personalities can charge a subscription to get ad-free viewing and a number of other features that they can offer to their really hardcore audience. And you know, one big thing is the technology. If you look at esports over the last 10 years, even 5 years ago, 4 years ago, it was pretty difficult to watch. It wasn't the best thing. And now you can actually distribute global HD live video for free. And why, you know, why is streaming compelling? So it's free. You can do it. Maybe you can make a little bit of money out of it. But one major, major thing with how streaming is different from uploading videos to YouTube is that it's really easy to do. You don't have to think about really offering high-level commentary. You don't have to think about editing, throwing on overlays, doing any post-processing. You're just playing and engaging with your audience and having a good time. It's what you're doing anyway, especially for pro players. You're laddering. You're practicing with your team. You can just stream that and make money. It's also interactive for the viewers and for the broadcasters. You get feedback from your viewers. You can actually ask questions as a viewer to the broadcaster. You can ask questions to other viewers. It's actually a little bit different from even a television experience, right? A lot of times you might sit with your family at home or your friends at home and watch TV, but you're interacting with, you know, three, four, five people around you. You're interacting with thousands of people at the same time. And, of course, it's interesting. There's a broad scope of content when it comes to streaming. It's not just pro players. It's not just pro player commentary. It's speedrunners. It's charity marathons. It's people just opening, you know, brand new games on launch day and playing through it and talking about, you know, what they like and don't like about the game. But it's you know, you can really stream anything you want around this gameplay. And it's turning work into work. You know, you think about your pro gamer. Let's say you're not sponsored by a team yet, but you're a great player. Technically, you're working when you're playing the game. You're practicing so that when you go to a tournament, you have a chance to beat the pros who are sponsored and who are more established. But this way, while you're practicing, if you can grow yourself as a personality, you can actually make money from your practice sessions. So really, you're actually working rather than just, you know, working to try to get to the point where you can win prize money and join the team.
Thank you, Kevin. So one of the things I feel is very special about how esports is growing in America is the community. So here with us is one of the community leaders, Anna Prosser, Ms. Morgan. I would like to have her give everybody a perspective of how esports community is like in the United States.
Thanks, David. Well, one of my responsibilities as a media personality, if you will, as well as doing some PR for a pro team, is kind of understanding, thinking about communicating with the community. So David asked me to provide you with a community snapshot, which is a really appropriate way to describe it because I definitely don't want to pretend that I can speak for the entire esports community. But where I come from, like I said, is mostly a media base in StarCraft II. So I have I guess for the last 3 years or so, been kind of growing my career there, and now I'm at a point where my full-time living comes from StarCraft II. So when I tell people that, you know, my living is in professional video gaming, the most common question I get is, well, how'd you get that job? So I'm going to give you a little bit of background on me and how I kind of got there. I started out from an educational standpoint in international studies and speech communication. So, you know, in college, I met Jeff in Control Robinson, who was at that time, I guess you could call him a semi-pro player, because he was one of the best in the United States. He had gone to a lot of tournaments. He had had some success, and he was making money from different either winnings from tournaments and eventually being on Team EG, which at that point was a lot smaller, and salaries, you know, if you were making something like $100 a month, you were really on top then. So I got introduced to this world of pro gaming and was ecstatic because as a kid, I was one of that, like David said, about 50% of my age group who played video games. I love them. And being a female also, the demographic is a little bit smaller playing video games. So being involved in something where I could go to a tournament and I could be around lots of people who liked video games and even maybe meet some other girls who liked video games was really attractive to me. I started going to those tournaments, and Jeff was actually on a reality show called WCG Ultimate Gamer, which as far as I know, was the first reality show to be based around professional video gaming. And I ended up talking to the host of that show after the show was finished and saying, you know, and his name's Joel Gordon. I said, Joel, I would kill to have your job, being able to be on screen, speak in front of a camera, which is what I've been training to do. It's what I've been working toward in my career and what I'd like to do. And not only that, you get to talk about video games all day and you get to meet all these pro players. And I said, you know what, Joel, what do I do to get that job? I'm sure there aren't very many out there. So what do I do? And he said, you just start doing it, Anna. You get a camera, you start doing it, and soon enough you'll find your way to where you're supposed to be. So at that tournament, that very tournament, I pulled out my really crappy little camcorder, and I put a mic in a player's face, and I just started interviewing them. From there, eventually people started watching my videos. Some people liked them and wrote about it on Team Liquid. Other teams started noticing that. Some of their sponsors paid me to do some interviews for them. By paid, I mean I got some travel accommodations and a flight, and that was a really big deal. And eventually moved to the point where Team Evil Geniuses said, we want to bring you on alongside Jeff to help us on the management side. And at that point, it had been probably about a year that I had been producing media content, and I could only really call it a hobby. I mean, like I said, travel accommodations are great, but they're not going to pay the bills. So at that point, I was working full-time for a financial firm, doing their marketing. I was also running a small communication consulting business by myself. I was doing, as David mentioned, pageantry, interestingly enough, and was Miss Oregon USA 2011, and then was also doing this esports hobby on the side. And something had to go. I couldn't do all of it at once. And when I laid out my life and I said, what is it that I really am passionate about and where do I want to end up? I had to make the choice between, am I going to be comfortable and know that I can count on this salary coming in and know that I can reasonably have a sensible career? Or am I going to jump in with both feet and say, I believe in esports and I think I can do it? And I made that decision at that point to jump in and work for Team Evil Geniuses and move to Phoenix, where they have their EG Lair training facility. And that's what I've been doing for the past few months now, which is really exciting. So the next question that David asked me, as opposed to just talking about myself the entire panel, he asked me to explain why, as the person that I am, somebody who maybe had gained some notoriety through being Miss Oregon USA or who has the skill set that I do, why did I choose esports? Why did I make that decision and that jump? The reason is that esports had a lot of things to offer that I really value very highly. First of all, I get to work with personalities that are compelling and varied. I don't work with the same kind of person every day. I don't work with the same people every day. I work with people from all over the world in a virtual office, if you will, every day. And that's very exciting for me as somebody who was interested in international business. So first of all, the very reach of it. And then second of all, the type of people that I'm working with are so exciting in that these are people that have to be very passionate. They have to be dedicated. They have to know that this is going to take everything they have, and they have to be excited about it. So pro players, for example, in the team house for Evil Geniuses, they'll practice probably about 10 hours a day. Then they'll also be streaming for part of that. They may coach people to make a little bit of extra money on the side to keep their careers sustainable. They may be doing podcasts or being personalities. So their workday is very extensive, but they love every second of it because they're so passionate about it. Also, it's a fast-paced career with diverse opportunities. And by that, I mean that I'm not going to sit around each day and kind of twiddle my thumbs or do a routine. I'm constantly going to have to seek out new opportunities and think of new ways to grow not only my personal career, but this entire scene in order to keep my career sustainable. By diverse opportunities, I think what's so cool about esports is when people ask me, you know, how do I get involved? What I can tell them is, look, sit down, think about what it is you love to do, what you're passionate about, what you're good at, and what you have to offer. and then figure out how you can offer that to esports, because chances are there's going to be room for you right now in esports. That even goes to the level of, you know, we have this training facility for Evil Geniuses in Arizona, and we had someone contact us and say, hey, you know, I really appreciated what you said about being involved in esports. I'm a chef, and I want to help out with esports, so if you guys need someone to come cook for you sometime, I'm there. And, you know, that's something that... It's a bit of a reach, but that's as far as it goes in esports right now. There is room for everybody. And that's exciting for me, because that means I don't have to fit myself into a box. I get to offer exactly what I want to the scene that I'm passionate about. Thirdly, I value the chance to be a part of the beginning of something. As David mentioned, we're a very young scene, and we have big dreams, and we're confident that we're going to get there, but right now is where we are deciding who we are as a business, as a community, and I have a voice in that. I get to be part of the conversation, part of the discourse, and decide what is the personality collectively that we are going to present to the world. And that is very, very much attractive to me, especially because, lastly, our community is very powerful and very unique. I think that comes from, as Mr. Che was mentioning, the internet and technology very much offers us opportunities that we may not have had even a few years in the past to communicate with each other on a widespread level. So I can tweet to a large mass of people. I can spend time in Twitch stream chats and be talking to people who have the same interests as me. We have forums where anyone who's interested in the same kinds of things I'm interested in might hang out with me. So we have this very... it's almost a place that we hang out on the internet. And that, I think, separates us from many communities that maybe don't have that community gathering place. And that gives us an edge. That gives us power. A story that I love to share is that once I was trying to raise just $300 for this charity, the Children's Miracle Network, through a website. And I put the link on Team Liquid and I said, hey guys, I know this isn't esports related, but I'm just putting it in a blog, but just wanted you to know I'm trying to raise money for this charity. If you have $5 to spare, please throw it that way. Within 10 minutes, the site had crashed, and I had raised $300. So the people in our community are so excited to be a part of what everybody else is doing. They're so excited to, you know, the idea of support esports is so pervasive that we want to help each other out, even when it doesn't have to do with esports. And that kind of power and that kind of excitement and that kind of passion is so thrilling for me, because I know that once we get to the point where we're not fighting just to survive, we can start fighting to make a positive difference in our world. We can implement positive change, and we can be that community that says, what do we want our next generation to look like? What do we want to provide for them? And so when you ask me the question, why am I in esports? It's because that is my vision, that we will not only succeed in making this a sustainable business, but succeed in creating a community that brings about very tangible, positive change.
Great. Thank you, Anna. Mm-hmm. So at this time, I'd like to open it up for questions. Yes?
I was wondering, back when CGS was announced, they spent a lot of money on that, George TV was involved, it was huge, and it obviously didn't work. I wonder what the panel kind of thought, why? Was it just not... Was there a model flaw?
I can jump in with my perspective,
sure.
And the rest of the panel can welcome to jump in. So I think that right now, CGS, I think one is it's not, the timing is not right. So if you look at it, the popularity of that new medium, as I talked about right in the beginning, like the internet, YouTube, Twitch TV, it's not there. So what it's trying to do is force a new concept from TV with a high cost basis. So what happened is that over the long haul, I think they spent a lot of money. You know, investors are not patient with that basically a high-cost model, and they basically pulled the plug. So if you look at the sports leagues today, we actually operate on a shoestring. So a lot of us here, you know, as, you know, the league commissioner, you know, director, some of the guys, my guys are sitting over there, you know, we basically put computers together. Nothing is, you know, too much of a task for any of us. Like, you know, myself and my teammate, you know, Errol, were driving people back and forth between the airport to cut costs, you know, for the event. So the, you know, the cost basis is really low, and the internet is free, it's open, so you don't have the cost of basically TV. So I feel like that's why there's a better chance to do it today than before. And right now we're only looking at the revenue of the supporters on the internet. They vote by their Twitter, their Facebook, and their dollars, you know, where we believe is important. And I believe that right now, because we run in such a lean manner, that we have a chance to be successful now. So anybody want to jump in?
On the other hand, I would just add that gamers don't watch TV. In the training house, we've never even purchased cable because we only watch streams or we watch shows on Netflix and Hulu. So I don't think that the audience is there for that particular medium.
Yeah, and just to add a little bit to that, you know, these days, anybody that owns an Xbox watches about 4 hours of content on Xbox a day. That's not playing games. That's as much as the average American has spent watching television over the last couple of decades. So there's that, just that cultural shift that people are just used to not consuming television, right? Our generation is just not used to consuming television in the way it's meant to be consumed. And I think CGS was on DirecTV, right?
Yeah, DirecTV.
Yeah, which is probably another problem in itself, so...
The gentleman in black.
What does the panel think that are going to be the most important games for esports, say, 2 years from now in Asia and in the Western?
Sure. I think that right now, MOBA titles are extremely important to Asia. So if you look at Dota, it basically set up a craze. League of Legends is after, you know, model after Dota. So what's the one flavor of that is going to be dominant? So it could be League of Legends, could be Dota 2 or Blizzard Dota. So it's yet to be seen. The other one is StarCraft II, of course. So it's very established. One of the things is that it has to be watchable. So one of the, in order to basically make a judgment, I would ask yourself, watching other people play, if you find it very enjoyable, then you have a game there. So the spectator experience has to be designed into the game.
I'd be interested to hear what Mr. Che has to say about the staying power of StarCraft, considering that StarCraft 1 was so long-standing and then StarCraft 2 is still fairly young. Do you think that it will be as long-standing as StarCraft 1?
Yes, actually, as he asked something about the game change, then pro players can lose everything, pro players will lose everything, but I don't think so, because as StarCraft 1, Brood War in Korean scene, it released 12 years ago, but now they playing StarCraft Brood War nowadays, until nowadays, because how much time you playing basketball, or how much time you playing football or rugby or something, but you don't even play, but you are enjoying to watch NFL and NHL and NBA and Major League Baseball. So that's why StarCraft 1 is actually already die for playing, but all spectators just watching, even they are not playing. So StarCraft 2 has StarCraft released 2 years ago, but they plan two more expansion, and as we watch the StarCraft 1 Brood War scene, then StarCraft 2 will be long more 10 years or 12 years, I guess. So if the infrastructure is already done, as she mentioned, but in control, he's pro player, and at the same time he has some personality, so he can be the reporter, or he can be the commentator, he can be the leader of the team. So infrastructure is already done. So this is why we call esports not just hobby. This is why we call esports industry, new age industry. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. And
one of the really great things I've seen in the esports meetings, which you're talking about, is very interactive. And I guess specifically in Twitch, I have the chat. And if you look at different streams, like Day 9 stream, he does things like he has a question ground where he runs polls, yes, things like that. Where do you see like the interactive component?
Sure. Yeah, I think it's largely going to revolve around chat. It's going to continue to do so. It's sort of the new AOL chat room, right, where you're not just chatting, you're actually consuming content in conjunction with that, and it's around your varied interests. You know, I think there's going to be a lot of social media integration. I mean, not getting into too many specifics about what we're building. I think, you know, it's tough to say. You can only get so immersed in doing something outside of watching something else, right? While you're watching someone play a game, your attention span can only go so far. So once you get outside of the direct sort of linear interaction, which is chat, you know, there are these other things like polling questions. There's, you know, there. I mean, if I think about things like StarCraft, one thing you can add is like sort of a live stats. Heads up stats. A lot of these guys have it. A lot of the leagues have it in the game already. And Blizzard's actually done a great job building it into the game observer mode. But there are certainly other ways to mine that data and present it in an interesting way. I think League of Legends also has a lot of rich data that's going on, like second to second, that you could mine for data. Of course, there's voting. I'm sure there's lots of, you know, there's a lot of wagering going on, a lot of betting companies getting into the space. So I'm sure that will become part of the interactive component. But we'll see.
I wanted to get you guys' opinion on, do you see any issues with players using their gamer IDs as opposed to their actual real names as impeding the actual progress of esports and breaking into the mainstream, since that's sort of the standard with all other sports, or is that not going to matter at all?
Yeah. Do you want to take this one?
Yes, some, because this esports is for all the world. Think about it. In Korean, pro players will use their own name. My name is Jung Won Chae in Korean, but I guess if I use my name to all spectators, then maybe so many people can't realize who am I and who. But I just use my nickname, something like Dr. Chae or something, that they can realize very easily. So that's why they use their nickname. And before being a pro gamer, they are just amateur gamer, and they are very good skill level in internet. But they can put their name, actual name, before pro gamer. They just use their nickname. But if they became famous, they use their nickname consistently because they have fame about their nickname. They have fan base according to their nickname, so they use that consistently, I guess.
So in terms of my perspective, one of the beauty of esports is it's a new frontier. So there's innovations that you can bring in. So if you look at the WWE or old time WWF, right? Basically you have the opportunity to create a persona about yourself, which is wonderful because there's, you know, like Destiny, for example. You know, he used to be a carpet cleaner. He's not the, you know, the most compelling guy when you look at him. But when you listen to him on stream, when you understand his personality, people become fun. And I still remember he actually brought three girls into IPL 2, and he said, these are the Destiny Angels. And I forget, I will not forget that moment. And that's a persona that he created for himself, right? So I think that, again, when we look at esports, it's really about, you know, taking a very loose look of it, so we don't have to make it like football. We don't have to make it look like baseball. And then really try to come up with the thing that we all enjoy. And really, you know, as Anna has said, you know, we're the pioneers of this, and this is why we're all really excited about that prospect.
Yeah, and I think it's actually one of the truly unique components in our world, right? It's the ability to choose or have your friends choose after you've have this established personality versus your given name, right? It's very unique, and it's not like it's that unusual. I mean, you look at other sports, right? You got Ocho Cinco, you got the bus. People have nicknames that are recognized. It's just sort of reversed, actually, right? You start with your nickname, and then eventually, as you become more and more recognized, more and more people know your real name. So, but I don't think it's going to go away. I don't think it hinders anything, and I think it's a really awesome, very unique aspect of this community.
What do you think about the possibility of getting people to watch esports that don't play it? I can tune into any sports channel. I don't play sports, but I can watch it. But I think it's fair to say League of Legends and StarCraft, your games, you can't understand it unless you've played it, because there's so much going on. And the problem with that is you have to make an esport complicated, because there isn't a lot of physical skill. So to make it healthy and a high skill ceiling, there needs to be a lot to control and be able to reign over your opponent. But at the same time, it makes it really hard to watch.
Yeah. So I'll answer it first from a league perspective. Love other panelists to jump in. So this is where I think we have a flexibility picking other games. So in South by Southwest, shout out to Rob sitting back there. We actually had a fighter tournament with Street Fighter for Cross Tekken, which is a great title for people to get, you know, used to watching esport, because people can watch it. It's very intuitive. You have two fighters, there's health bar, you know who's winning, who's not. It's you don't need to know all the combos, and it's very engaging. And as you become a fan, then, you know, you start watching, you know, a more complex game, like, say, you know, StarCraft 2, and then League of Legends is really complex. I still haven't figured that out yet, because I still can't name, like, 10 champions. But anyways...
And then it's kind of like traditional sports, because people forget about the fact that when they first watched football, I still remember the day people trying to explain football to me. It was complex. I said, wow, you know, what is an interception? You know, oh, wow, you know, what is this pass interference? You know, is it, so all of these rules people explain to you. So the more fans are out there, and I think Day 9 is a great example of that, where who like are like the superstars who, you know, take the time to explain it in a layman term to other people. Like Barcraft is an awesome, you know, mechanism to do so. Like grab a buddy and just really just explain the game to them. They can really understand it. That's the best way to learn.
I would say, too, that I actually came in as a spectator, I would say, because I didn't start. I mean, I played like Warcraft 2 back in the day, but Starcraft was foreign to me. And it was very similar to, like David said, to watching football. Like, I still, for the life of me, don't really understand football. I understand the basics of it. I can tell who's winning or not, you know, but I'll still watch it. It's fun to watch. But StarCraft, not only is it fun to watch because you can basically tell, I mean, this army is killing that army, so this guy wins. I mean, that's fairly basic, but it's fun to look at. I mean, StarCraft is a beautiful game. So when you add, I mean, I'll even go so far as to say I worked in recruiting for a while, and I noticed that when I had a screen that was playing colorful pictures, I got way more attention from people my age than maybe something that was static or something like that. So I think that the advantage that StarCraft has is that it looks nice. It's fun to look at, and even if you don't necessarily understand the details of it, I think there was a long period where I didn't really understand what was going on other than this guy beat that guy or this guy has more guys than that guy, you know?
Yeah, and I think this is going to kind of go back to your original question and a little bit of your question. What is it going to take? It's going to take these long-standing titles and game types that people just understand, right? A lot of people, I'd say probably most people, have touched a first-person shooter, right? So whether you're watching Halo or Counter-Strike or Black Ops or Call of Duty, you're going to get it, right? You fundamentally understand what's going on. You may not understand the intricate rule set specific to that game very well, but you can get what's happening, right? And that's why I think the next FPS title that gets spectator mode right, which is maybe you have a zoom out bird's eye view so you can see where every person of every team is, you know, the sniper staked out over here, you know, rocket launcher guys over here, you can actually start to understand the team strategies on a more fundamental level. Those game titles are going to really start to take off. But it's because we have these like long-standing games like Halo, Call of Duty, Counter-Strike, StarCraft that have lasted a really long time, more and more people of this current generation are just going to be able to understand when they watch a game. Whether they're an FPS player watching StarCraft or a StarCraft player watching League of Legends, they're just going to kind of fundamentally understand. Just like I don't understand the rules of rugby or cricket, but I can watch it because I watch football, so I know that the goal is to get the ball down the field, right? So,
totally into my future.
What do you all think about how to grow esports? I mean, like, what do you think, at least from your different perspectives, like, what do we need more of, other than viewers, of course, and what do we need less of? Because, you know, we are consistently growing, but, you know, it's a question of how best do we grow, and, you know, what have we gotten so far that's great and need to keep doing, you know, not so great pressure.
Diana, you want to start?
Sure. I get this question a lot, and I think one of the main things is that the content is there now. It's accessible. You can watch it at almost any time. You can tune into Twitch and find some good esports content to watch. And a lot of it is that people just don't know it's out there. A lot of my friends and colleagues, they like video games, and maybe they don't even know that they like watching video games. But I've sat down with them and say, hey, watch State of the Game with me on my TV. So we'll watch State of the Game. I'll explain things to them. They'll say, oh, I want to watch a StarCraft game now. And, you know, a year down the road, they're at an event. So I would say probably the most important first step of many is kind of just spreading the word and letting people know that the content is out there.
That's a really good answer.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. It's just getting your friends to start to watch and understand it. I mean, I think about one of my closest friends refuses to play StarCraft, will never play it. And I was like, just try watching it with me. And I sat him down for probably about 30 minutes. I think I was watching an IEM replay with him. And since that day, he's been watching every single day. Still hasn't played the game, but he watches it and he appreciates it. And he starts to learn about the personalities. It's really just about starting to spread the word to your friends and you know, getting them to understand why it's interesting. And I think it's fundamentally interesting enough that once they actually tune in and watch some game that they played or they're just slightly interested in, they'll get hooked.
Yeah, so from a league perspective, there's two things I want to add. One is that I actually believe, just like software development, I have a software development background, that people have to adopt a very open, not a closed proprietary atmosphere. So it's very supportive, you know, supporting many leads, supporting the people who are at the grassroots level, and try to basically get them jobs, get them, you know, the you know, enough to get by so that they can continue on their passion. The second thing I feel is very important is that, you know, that people, as they're getting more successful, not too many people basically look at it as a gold rush and basically try to, you know, take advantage of this beautiful thing that has been created, because it could be very fragile, it could get ugly very quickly, and it would disappear overnight.
Probably the expert on what we could do is Mr. Che, because yes. Esports has the most successful hold in Korea.
Yes. I totally agree with three people. The most important thing is just spread this esports to your friend and friends. Then they will bring other friends. Then so many people can gather to watch esports. This is very simple. Simple thing. If you watch esports but you have no idea what's happening about that, then you can just try by your computer. You can just run StarCraft 2 and you can play StarCraft 2. You don't need to gather other 11 or 12 players to play basketball or football or soccer. You're just playing your StarCraft 2 while watching streaming. So this is very simple to learn to watch and learn to how to play or something. So first, more and more players watching this stream, and they came to watch live event, then more sponsors come and more infrastructures will be done, then more players can grow to real industry, not hobby. Yeah. Oh, sorry for English.
So you kind of already addressed this, I think, but I think it's interesting that there's not any game developers on the panel. So what role do the game developers have in esports?
An absolutely pivotal role, right? I mean, the reason why StarCraft is so popular, League of Legends is so popular, is because they thought about the game as a spectator would want to watch a game, right? They built StarCraft 2 from the ground up with that in mind, the number of units, the size of units, the type of landscape. Like, they actually thought about all those small minutia components in designing the game so that it was easy to watch and easy to consume. It's in their court. Right. Again, as I mentioned with the FPS, if someone, the first person to come out with an FPS that has a really awesome spectator and observer mode, is going to crush it in esports. They just are. It's just right now the way you watch, you know, Halo and Call of Duty, it's like watching football from helmet cams. Right. It wouldn't really be that interesting to watch that. Actually, it would probably be really nauseating to watch that. So, you know, it takes the developer to really think about it that way. So absolutely pivotal. We wouldn't have esports if the games weren't made, you know, with that in mind. I mean, obviously, some games like Quake and Counter-Strike, not the easiest to spectate, but they work. But they're kind of forced by the community, right? There's this incredibly passionate small community of people who just want to watch, want to play, want to compete with each other. But it's game. It takes, you know, it takes companies like Blizzard and EA and THQ to really think about it from the ground up during the development process to make games really successful.
David already mentioned collaboration being very important to the growth of esports, and I think that that's one of the most important collaborations is between game developers and companies that are bringing out games and the esports community, because if we don't have the kind of games that we can promote or that people like to watch, then esports won't succeed.
So
the esports industry has this model is predicated on building viewership, and so it's mainly a viewership phenomenon. But in the video game space, I think there's a huge opportunity for artistic career sport as well, and growing the space of esports at the grassroots level and all the way out there to change. So my question, I guess, is do you feel that esports organizations' mission should involve building a participatory side of the game as well, or that should be left to publishers and esports organizations can just focus on?
Yeah, so that's a great question. You hit a really great point. I believe that it is up to the league and the publisher
to basically promote the popularity of participating on a grassroots level. So getting somebody started on a beginner level, getting like the helpful tutorials, making sure that the community is not so... one of the reasons why, you know, there was a hard decision to pick Han versus League of Legends. I actually played both games. One of the reasons why I picked League of Legends was the community. Because when I went into the Han community, I played two times. I was very basic. I killed a lot. I have deserved to basically be called many names. But it made the experience not fun. So I think having basically that be moderated, you know, so that is news friendly, is very important in growing it. And then on the competitive level, it is very important to basically structure the prizes so everybody wins. So one of the things that we did at IPL was that even a 32 place person will actually have a, you know, if they make it to the championship bracket, has a take home winning. So you take care of the guys on the bottom because it gives noobs again a chance to basically graduate to the top. As we do more things in the future, one of the things that we want to do more of is basically online qualifier, taking basically a model or book out of poker, is to basically run more regional events, discover the stars. Like, for example, Stefano, who won IPL 3, he won one of our online qualifiers. He was from France. We paid for his flight to fly to IPL 3, and he won the whole thing. A lot of upsets. Nobody knew who he was, but now he's an international star. We need more of those because I feel like that's a can-do story, right? Like, having successes like that, having the folk heroes like that are really critical factors for, you know, esports to continue to grow.
I think we're unfortunately out of time.
Okay.
I'm so one chat question.
Okay.
They wanted me to ask again. So we have all these competing leagues. So you have like GSL, you have IPL, MLG. How do the leagues grow esports while growing their own organization? Because there's so much, you know, competition. You'll have like MLG streams during IPL streams, and then, you know, how about scheduling too? Because there's a whole IPL over patch right now.
Yeah.
So I mean, how do you manage growing esports and growing your organization?
So one of the things that is important from a league perspective, I think GSL is a model to look after, is as you become more financial successful, you have the ability to command the venue and dictate dates. So IPL, unfortunately, is not a desk date. So it was availability. We just had to jump on it at the Cosmopolitan. I think it's the right venue for us. It's a beautiful venue, and we took it. And we realized it was a conflict with PAX East. Very apologetic that happened. The key here is that as we basically look at this, my philosophy, if you look at IPL, is that we collaborate with everybody, right? We cross-promote, GSL, you know, we have the relationship, you know, DreamHack, we're talking to them. The only league that we have issue with is MLG, honestly, and that's something that we can work through, you know, and I feel like in order for it to grow, you know, leagues need to cross-promote each other. More importantly, like, for example, a lot of the, you know, the event that I show a picture of, a lot of the people who helped out at the event are actually a local esports chapter, and they have an event next week. Just want to give a little plug for them, that I come out and support them as well. It's really about, you know, organizations supporting each other. That's important to make this grow, continue to grow. Okay, so thank you, everyone.
Thanks, everybody.
Yeah, thanks for coming.